Oh, yes.
How do you feel? I mean, is this whole thing, the recent flare-up with the Orange Juice Queen, Anita Bryant, been beneficial to you, do you think? Has it helped to bring light again to your case?
Well, that's hard to say. I would hope it would, in that, you know, one, the slogan, I believe, that, or the corporation, it probably is incorporated now, and, you know, Save Our Children.
Right.
Ann and I lost one of our children because of our homosexuality, and Anita Bryant is out saying, you know, save our children from being taught by teachers and you know, coming into contact with, you know, with homosexuals, what have you. I believe it's mainly, you know, just she started out with just the teaching aspects of it, but I think she's migrated a lot further than that. But there are many, many closet teachers that are homosexual, mm-hmm. and will probably remain in the closet and never be known. That's mm-hmm. going to be taught, respected, and admired by many children. Mm-hmm. Homosexual parents can literally have their children just taken from them, even though the child loves the parent, even though the child wants to remain with the parent. The court can come in and say, you know, we're labeling you, you're a homosexual, so we're branding you as unfit, and we're going to remove your children from your home.
Richard actually did state repeatedly that he wanted to stay with you, and as I understand, he was asking and asking and asking after having
that's
been taken
correct.
Away, when am I coming home?
That's right. He still does. You know, that's obviously, that's where he wants to be, but nobody seems to be. You know, the whole thing, the court cases are supposed to be in the interest of the children, but somehow
yeah.
I think they've missed this whole case. The child wasn't even of a small amount of interest in this case.
Well, and the two psychologists that evaluated Richard, and even the court-appointed psychologist, who's we'll get into him in a few minutes, I'm sure. But even from him, it was stated on the stand that Richard loved me, I loved him, he wanted to remain with me, you know. We did have a love of parent and child relationship. We both developed and, you know, thrived within this family unit, you know, as mother and son and what have you. And that, you know, the best interest of the child would be that the child remain within the home. The two psychologists that I was speaking of that evaluated Richard are very well known in the Dallas area. I mean, it took like 20 minutes for each of them to, you know, for their
testimony? Or
well, not for the testimony, their credentials to be read.
Oh my God.
They're just, you know, just like just, you can't find hardly any better in the.
Well, and the psychiatrist that went on the stand, he took 30 minutes for his credentials. He had been everywhere. I mean, obviously, he had a fabulous background, but nobody seemed to be concerned about these people. It was like if anybody knew or had any knowledge of children, those people did, but they seemed to be avoiding that fact completely.
In talking about the psychiatrist, I want to talk about the psychologist, the court-appointed psychologist, and then I'll make a remark of what the psychiatrist said. The court-appointed psychologist, like I said, made the statement that Richard loved me, I loved him. It was a stable working relationship between mother and son, son and mother. But that he would recommend that Richard be, you know, given to Doug, because I used judgment in two incidences. One of them being that I allowed Richard Calvin to wear a boy's blue jean outfit. Now, the doctor did say that he complimented Richard. You read the book, so
yeah.
His testimony is word for word.
Yeah.
He complimented Richard on how nice he looked. And he said, Richard told me that it belonged to Judy Ann. And he said that upset him, you know, in that it was okay, you know, but I, you know, for any other parent
yeah.
to do this. But I was a lesbian, and I could never allow Richard to wear anything or have anything for him that might have been girl-orientated.
Yeah.
Then he wore a YWCA T-shirt, and I say YWCA T-shirt. It was a part of his gymnastics outfit. He was in advanced gymnastics. I was quite proud that he was a member of the most fabulous YWCA in Dallas County. And
A lot of other boys went on.
Oh, yes. When under cross-examination, it was mentioned to this psychologist, are you aware that there are boys and girls and men and women programs at the YWCA, you know, and he said, no, I was not aware of that,
right.
But it makes no difference. She is a lesbian, and she cannot let her child wear anything that has anything to do to be girl orientated.
I think his words were poor judgment.
Yes, poor judgment.
Or bad judgment.
Yeah.
My daughter's response to the blue jean outfit was, gee whiz, I was the one that was wrong. I was in drag, not Richard, you know?
But then to pass on to the psychiatrist's testimony, when he was told about the incident with a child wearing something, you know, that had belonged, or, you know, was it unusual for children to exchange clothes, especially blue jeans, things that are unisex anyway. And he said, well, of course not. His daughter even wore his shirt sometime, and he was from England, and he used to wear the kilts, you know.
Right.
And he said, you know, that's a skirt, and what could somebody do with that?
Yeah. trying to skirt the issue, as they would say. Yeah. But you say that some, you know, that these incredibly well-known and respected psychologists were brought in to testify, and at least two out of three testify very much in your favor as to the stability of your home and as to the fact that your children, actually, because the kids were all examined, shall I say,
evaluated.
All the kids were okay.
Yeah, they knew they were. You know, they were glad these adults could decide that.
and then the testimony seemed to fall largely on deaf ears, and my next zinger question is, do you think that the verdict was decided before the trial began?
Well, I think these people had a certain amount of second-level prejudice that we were really hitting a brick wall with. I think it was extremely hard for us to inform 12 people. I think if we'd had a judge and an educated man to start out with, one that was a little bit ahead, at least knew, had seen things like this to a certain degree in the courtroom, that we would have had a better chance trying to inform him or educate him than we would the 12 people that were on there.
And then, too, when you have, you know, prospective jurors to come into the jury room, all 25 sit in the courtroom at the same time during voir dire. And, you know, as you pass from one to the other, they begin to know, especially if they want to get on that jury, to know how to answer the questions so they can get on it.
Right.
And the people that said that they had worked with a homosexual or had known a homosexual were struck immediately.
They would have a bias.
Yes.
Oh, no.
They might have been able to sit, you know, there and be open, you know, as to listening to testimony. There was only one man that sat on the jury that had said in open voir dire that he knew anything of homosexuality, and it was Tony Lucille who voted for me.
Right.
And he had made the comment that he had read that 20% of all professional football players were homosexual.
Right. And he's a former football player himself.
Yes,
right.
Dallas Cowboy.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting. I wonder if the jurors themselves were not asked whether or not they were homosexual, because another thing I was struck by was that a lot of people were called to the stand as witnesses. Friends of yours particularly, I noticed, including some married women who had just had children, I believe, were asked about their own sexuality.
Witnesses were asked. You know,
I mean,
psychologists were asked if they... I think the only one they didn't ask was the chaplain in the hospital, and I'm not sure whether they asked him or not. I think they passed him. I guess that was just too much for even Mike McCurley to ask.
I'm just amazed they even got away with that.
Well, there's a lot of things we wonder about how they got away with, but they did. And another thing, you know, Rebecca, we have been asked, whether... if we were somewhere else, you know, of course, we were in Dallas, Texas,
right.
You know, if you're going to think of geography and what have you,
mm-hmm.
Were we in a place where we could not have received a fair trial?
Mm-hmm.
Could we have received a fair trial in New York, California,
right.
What? I really think that we received the kind of trial in Dallas, Texas, as if we would have received anywhere else, for the simple reason is the way they go about selecting a jury.
Right.
And with the strikes that, you know, that a lawyer has, you know, each lawyer, they could have come up with the same jurors anywhere.
And the open voir dire was helpful, too, to create a jury that obviously knew how to answer and what to do.
Right.
And you get also a certain, the cross-section of people aren't as great as they should be because you go on who owns property and where.
Right.
The typical property owner in Dallas, I'm afraid, or in even most places
really?
Are not your...
Our most open-minded.
Right.
Yeah. What about a trial by judge as opposed to trial by jury? Would you fare it any better? And who decided it was going to be a trial by jury anyway?
Mr. Richard wanted the trial by jury,
of course.
Yeah.
Really? Well.
And I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm sure the judge probably has his own second-level prejudice, and he showed throughout the trial. But at least he, you know, I felt like he would listen to the psychologist, and whether, you know, who knows. I feel like we'd be a little better off.
You know, Mary Jo, when you were talking about the possibility of having had the trial elsewhere, you know, and that you probably would have gotten about the same treatment,
mm-hmm.
I think that's probably very true, considering that the wonderful state, Empire State of New York, that I love dearly, did not pass the ERA, mm-hmm. that gay rights bills have come before liberal New York City time and time and time again and been voted down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows? I mean, it's mm-hmm. hard to tell where the boondocks are. And I just have to mention, too, that I think you have incredible guts to have faced all that you faced in Dallas, Texas. Even though it's a large metropolitan city, it is still largely Southern Baptist, and there is, you know, maybe prejudice is a little more overt, I would say, than anywhere else, if not more prevalent. And you've got a lot of guts to still be staying there and fighting it out there and not just, you know, picking up and running or whatever, you know, could have been more comfortable in other ways. I mean, I really admire you for that, among many, many other things.
Well, Rebecca, another thing, too, it's not that, you know, Ann and I are not there just, you know, physically fighting society. You know, we have become public, and our lives certainly have changed somewhat. But we still have a 12-year-old daughter in the family, and, you know, the family unit has to remain, you know, so she can thrive and develop in it, too.
Yeah.
And when Richard comes to us, well, then he is back into the family unit for the 2 days he's with us every other weekend. But also, you know, my family, you know, and it tells of, you know, my mother, the shock of learning of my homosexuality and the rejection that we had and, you know, that she had for me. And then for the past year and a half, my mother has been in a transition period of, you know, of acceptance, along with the rest of my family. Well, my sister Carol, mainly.
Mm-hmm.
She was
mm-hmm.
the sister that, you know, just violently opposed me,
right.
as the book will bring out. And how both of them today go on radio, have been on television, have talked to the press. My sister Carol has offered her services to talk to any organization, telling the family side of, you know, how a family can be, upon hearing what they consider the most horrible news they could ever receive, how they can take this and reject a person and yet realize after a period of time, in the transition, you know, coming back and what have you, realize that it was foolish to have done it in the first place because all people were the same in the beginning, you know. And my sister Carol, I must admit, I admire her because of any person, she has traveled the furthest.
Wow, that is absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
I'm really surprised to hear that, having read.
I have to admit that my ex-husband and his present wife have done the same thing in Dallas, and I think it's, you know, you it's easy to say, well, we're gay and we're fighting for our rights, but when you sit here and watch the heterosexuals that all of a sudden come out
mm-hmm.
of their closet too, I guess, you know, it's really a hard transition for them, and now they're standing up for our rights and receiving the same amount of ridicule from people and the mm-hmm. hostilities that we are confronted with, just like the writer of the book. He goes through the same problems that we do now, all of a sudden, from a homophobic society, and they're heterosexual.
Guilt by association,
yeah.
That whole routine.
Yeah, and all they're saying is that we have a right to live, and they're opposed, you know. from many angles. So I you have to admire these heterosexuals that are standing up for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like people wonder how my mother can still love me, or how my two sisters, my brother, you know, how can they still love me, you know? And these facts and statements and all are coming to my family, you know, mm-hmm. people are saying. And you wonder, I mean, you know, they're heterosexual and everything, and yet they are receiving some persecution yeah. because they have realized that I am a part of the family, and they're just not going to, they love me, and they realize that, you know, even though they rejected me, it was very foolish, you know, but it was a period of time that they had, you know, right. it was a period of time they had to grow, mm-hmm. and man, they're way past Ann and I, you know, yeah, they're going to be out there and probably getting more rights for gays and for the homosexual people, the community as a whole, than Ann and I probably will be able to get, because these people have gone through it, and they know what it's like, and they... My family are not about to let people, you might say, persecute Mary Jo Risher, their sister.
The same thing goes for Mike and his
without standing
wife,
with
know.
Her.
If anything, Mike gives the men out there that there are or have been husbands to lesbians and everything the right. They can really look at things from an educated manner, and I think he kind of stands as a complete opposite from Doug Risher, and give, and maybe men who kind of worry about whether that would be a manly thing to do can
right.
certainly listen to Michael and believe that maybe that wasn't such a bad idea, that maybe they have a right to not be so afraid of the fact that their wives are raising their
right.
or their ex-wives are raising their children. As he states all the time, he says Anne hasn't changed except in her sexuality, you know. She's obviously the same mother and person that she was when I knew her, you know. It's just that she's her chosen lifestyle was a little different and we didn't make it.
That's really incredible. What's next? What's happening now? What's coming up? Are there any other trial dates and appeals dates in sight? Or
The jurisdiction thing is still in the Texas Supreme Court, and we're waiting for an answer. Hopefully, maybe by the September we'll get it, or before, maybe August, we'll get an answer from them saying whether the civil courts of appeal indeed do have jurisdiction or not.
Right. And now how old is Richard now?
I mean, he's 10.
Judy Ann is 12 now.
Yeah, and Judy's
well,
10
Richard's
now.
10 and a half, and
okay.
Judy Ann's 12 and a half.
Okay, this is
gotta give them their
okay,
hats.
Right? Oh, absolutely, especially at that age.
Oh, definitely, they're getting along. They're still hanging in there. As a matter of fact, they do all kinds of things together. They had a garage sale this last
couple
weeks.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Made a fortune off of junk they got out of the trash in the neighborhoods.
Yeah. They made $18 in one day.
That's great.
You know, they just put up some signs and worked their little garage sale. And
great idea.
You know.
If the rest of the world could work as well together as they do, we'd have it made.
That's terrific. Gosh, I think I'd like to try that myself, but I can't find a garage here in New York. Yeah, I'm thinking now, if this, when this trial comes up before the Texas State Supreme Court, it will take place where? Also in Dallas? Is there a branch of that? Or would you go
Austin.
To Austin?
Austin,
the capital
where it is now. Yeah.
This is all very strange. I'm getting very confused in my old existential
humor. Well, it's in Austin right now just for the jurisdiction. I mean, they haven't even said anything about the merits of the case.
You know, it's blowing my mind because, now, as I understand it, Texas actually did vote for the ERA. Texas as a state,
right.
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, uh-huh.
And also, Austin has had a gay rights bill for several years now.
That's right.
Austin, which is a very strange combination of a large student population, and then the Texas legislature is there also. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that in any way will contribute to a little more of an open atmosphere, or if the Texas legislators that are there are sort of untouched by what's going on.
The judges are the ones we have to worry about, I think.
I don't really foresee anything great coming out of the Texas Supreme Court in favor of the homosexual person. In this case, you know, the lesbian mother. I think the thing about it is that the Civil Courts of Appeal is made up of three elected officials of Dallas County, and the Texas Supreme Court is made up of 9 elected officials from the state of Texas. So, as I said to the Civil Courts of Appeal when they decided that they didn't have jurisdiction over this case, I said that I viewed it as a political sidestep on a very controversial mm-hmm. issue, mm-hmm. And which I think that the Texas Supreme Court will also do. I, you know, if they give an opinion, actually, one way or the other, you know, there are homosexuals that vote, and you know, people that are running for office, they want all the votes they can get. If you don't decide on anything, you might get all those votes, homosexual or heterosexual, you know.
I feel like
the Texas Supreme Court will probably say that the Civil Courts of Appeal did not have jurisdiction, and if that's the case, then we can come directly into the federal court stating that the state of Texas denied Mary Jo Richard due process of law. And I hope that's the way it goes.
I hope so, too. I think that, you know, well, it's got to happen.
It's also running into a lot of expense. It took $7,000 alone just for the Civil Courts of Appeal to decide they couldn't decide.
Yes.
You know, and so now we're very much in debt still from the legal expense, and we're still fighting, you know, and just to be able to appeal one more step, it, you know.
I want to get to just that in just a moment. First of all, I want to ask you, and reading the book, I read and expected that this entire ordeal had tremendous effect on your relationship, both good and bad. So how is your relationship now?
Well, we're hanging in there. I think we're pretty happy together. It's certainly been a big change in our lives, but I think we've handled it well.
Well, I think so, too. It's you know, it was a very trying thing for Ann and I to go through to become public when we were very conservative. We both, you know, professional people, myself being a nurse and Ann, assistant auditor at a bank. After it became public, we weren't, you know, fired, but we were forced out of our jobs. I was told I could no longer wear my name tag. I was reassigned, you know, to another division. I found out later that the staff, the doctors, the administrator, and all supervisors met to discuss what they were going to do with me, you know, and they were, it did go to all the nurses that the case was not to ever be discussed with me in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, you can, without being fired, you can slowly but surely be forced out of a position. And of course, another thing, Ann and I had this appeal, and you know, you can only stretch yourself so far. And we did have a, you know, at the time that we decided to both leave our jobs, we did go into a business that we had, you know, we had talked about for quite some time. But after, you know, when you're being forced out, you decide, well, you better get that business started or something, you know, so you can make a living.
Are you doing the painting and decorating?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are.
Terrific.
When we're there, do it.
Yes, I mean, you know, we'll be, you know, on the road promoting the book. And not only that, but it gives Ann and I an opportunity to meet with the many people that have helped support this case, you know, in the cities we're going to be in. And we're staying in the homes of people, you know, that have helped us and all. And it gives us the chance to thank them and to just sort of be with them. And, you know, they're the ones that gave us a lot of support when, you know, when it was just very few that was giving us the support. And this is a time for thank yous and promoting a book that, which of course will also help, you know, in the appeal.
Maybe two questions and maybe one question, depending on how you choose to answer it. And that is, what do you hope the book will accomplish? What do you think the book will accomplish?
Oh, well, it's a kind of loaded question. We hope, honestly, that the book, it's certainly a story that needed to be told. I think society needs to face up to what happens every day in court, whether it be a jury or a judge, and not just in courtrooms. It happens in your work, in your living arrangements. People aren't allowed to live freely and certainly are being discriminated against daily. We hope that somehow this will help and save some people from problems that we've gone through. Whether it does or not, we hope there will be a public opinion, and at least some few people, if just one person decides that they aren't going to pick on gay people or discriminate against them, that's one person, and hopefully they'll have a few friends and it'll grow on. And I think Mary Jo and I, the public opinion is extremely important to us. If we can just save one more lesbian mother from having to go through that, or just any gay person from having to go through their everyday discrimination, we'll be proud. We hope the book does do that.
Another thing, too, I don't know, I'm sure that, that you know, some people have given this this data to the public, but you know, if they're not aware of the fact that there is 2.5 to 3 million lesbian mothers in the United States alone. And I, you know, I'm sorry that I can't give the same data on how many homosexual fathers there is. But, I mean, you know, if you figure those, if you take those figures, and you probably could say that there's about 5 million homosexual fathers in the United States, or it could be even more than that. You've got a lot of parents there. And I know that all of these people are not having, you know, won't have to go into the courtroom. Surely they won't. But there will be some, because in the past there's been homosexual parents that's lost their children because they're homosexual. There's, in the courtroom, there's been homosexual parents that have just actually turned their children over. I've got a very dear friend who is a professional woman, had 2 very small children. I mean, they weren't even school age. And she, 2 months ago, signed her children over to her ex-husband. His approach to her, you give me those children, or I will do to you what Doug Risher did to Mary Jo Risher. And, you know, all parents, I mean, even though she would have liked to have fought, you know.
And this is just one of the cases we're close to. Everywhere we go, no matter what city it's in, there's always women and men that come up to us, and they've either lost the right to even see their children, or they've had to turn over their children to their ex-husbands, or the courts have taken them away. It happens continually. And it's sad. It's really sad.
Well, we just, like I say, in the past, the present, this is going on. The future, we know that it's going to happen, but we hope that it will happen in a smaller way, you know. If society reads this book, I think that, you know, hopefully, we're not asking that they, you know, completely agree with us. We're not asking that they, you know, say, well, yeah, I, you know, I believe in everything you do, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I, myself, as an individual, are not going to believe, even maybe things that you do. But that is you. You have a right to do and be the way that you want to. And if society gives the homosexual the right to just live, to be covered under the Constitution of this United States like everybody else, then you're not going to have these problems in the courts. You're not going to have these unhappy children, you know, having to be torn away from, you know, mothers and fathers that they had rather live with. I'm not saying that these children do not love the other parent, you know. All I'm saying is that the child should be able to live with a parent that they want to, and be able to love both parents the way that they should be able to.
Did Gifford Guy Gibson approach you about writing a book?
No, as a matter of fact, we asked him.
You did.
To write the book. There's a very good reason. Number one, Guy was very qualified, since he had sit through the courtroom with us. I think in the beginning of the book he explains how he got involved in it, and he sit through the entire trial with us, and he was very involved in it, and he became a very close friend and supporter of ours afterwards, he and his wife. And there, we were starting to get writers from across the country, some of them wanting to come down and spend 3 days with us and do Mary Jo's entire life, and the other ones would, other ones wanted to just spend 3 hours and do the trial and part of her life. And then we had some good, strong feminist women that called and wanted to do chapters in their book that they'd already started. Well, somehow, and a lot of paperback people, tons of paperback people, and somehow Mary Jo and I felt like that our story and our life deserved a little more dignity than that. So we chose the person that we certainly liked and cared for and knew was understanding, yeah, and we trusted him. And so we told Guy things in that book that, in our personal interviews, that neither one of us had had the nerve to ever tell anybody else but each other, or just didn't want to give that much of our own private lives to anybody else,
yeah,
but him. And I think he's done a good job with it. I personally admire Guy and give him much, much credit for what he's done. There's been lots of gay books done, and certainly lots of them none of us would like to have seen printed by people, heterosexuals, that didn't know a thing about homosexuals.
Right.
But Guy has a certain amount of feeling there, and I think he understands what Mary Jo and I were going through, and I think he did it in very good taste, and I applaud him for it.
I might make mention that the Library Journal has stated that, well, I believe it's Dr. Mary Mallory who reviewed the book. She is the top librarian at Harvard University. She has highly recommended the book and feels like that it will be the catalyst into society, you know, concerning gay people.
Really? Because there was more than just gay people involved. There was a lot of sexism involved in there, to say, to the word, from the word go. Also, I wanted to point out, I think we both missed this time, is the fact that ABC bought an option to do a TV movie on it, prime time and all that. And
fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And yes. We're quite proud of, you know, the people that they have selected to write it, who is William Blinn, who constructed Roots and who also wrote Brian's Song.
Great. You know, I mean, it must be very embarrassing and exciting at the same time to see something like that being formulated, like, who's going to play me, you know?
Oh, certainly.
Yes, and then too, Rebecca, you know, as the book brings out, and of course I'm sure that, you know, even in the movie, there will be our weak points mm-hmm. brought out as well as our strong points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, individuals, especially when they're, you know, interacting with people, they like to bring their strong points always out. They mm-hmm. don't want people to think that they've ever been weak or right. bad or anything else, mm-hmm. you know, or had bad times. Mm-hmm. And the book showed that we were real.
Yeah.
We're just like everyone else.
Human
we
beings.
Have we have weak points. We have good times. We have bad times. And we are strong in some areas.
I think Mary Jo's mother kind of summarizes that whole feeling after she read the first few pages, and we asked her how she felt because Mary Jo read it with her. Because certainly she didn't turn out to be the most wonderful person in the world in the beginning.
In the first few pages.
Right. She summarized it by, well, you can't argue with the truth. And I guess Mary Jo and I had to stand on the same.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm remembering how someone stated in here that this didn't really just have to do with gay rights per se only, but everybody's rights, because I mean, if they can tell you what to do in the privacy of your home, you know, they can tell anybody, or they can certainly attempt to. And so it's a real warning, I think, to everyone, to anyone who cares about their own personal rights and the rights of everyone else.
Well, it can happen to you. That's exactly what the book's saying.